Our theme for Advent this year is the growing edge. The four themes that we celebrate are hope, peace, joy, and love, which are really excellent words, really excellent Christian words. Some people say that those are tired words, that they don't mean anything anymore, that they're too nice or that they're too vague. And I agree that they are words that get tossed around a lot this time of year, but I think that if we pause and consider them, they are still words of power and challenge for us. Everyone wants hope, peace, joy, and love, don't we? I do. I want them for myself. I want them for my loved ones. I want them for the world. But they don't just happen, do they? Stockings and trees and candles don't seem to produce them. Presents don't seem to produce them. And so each year as we come to Advent and we talk about these themes, the question is always, but how? Advent is a season of preparation as we prepare for the arrival of the Christ child in our very messy world. It is a season where we once again manage a tension between waiting and preparing. And this year, Advent 2022, I suggest to you that we are called to prepare ourselves by paying attention to our growing edges. And that hope, peace, joy, and love are the growing edges for all of us. So in this Advent season, let us consider together how we prepare ourselves with hope, peace, joy, and love. I heard somebody this week ask the question, what does Advent feel like? They were a Jewish person, and so they didn't have this tradition. They're like, what's the sense kind of that you get? And the best way for me to explain the feeling of Advent is by comparing it to pregnancy. Expectation, preparation, waiting. Something good is coming. And there are things that we can do and we must do to prepare for it. But ultimately, it comes in its own time. Sometimes surprising, but always welcome. That is the kind of preparation and the kind of waiting that we do during Advent. Advent always begins with hope, the first theme. Often, the scriptures that are used to explain this hope are the ones from the Old Testament prophets. And so that is where we shall go this morning. I invite you to find in your Bibles the book of Habakkuk. You have Bibles in the pews in front of you. This is a very short book. It's one of the minor prophets, which we mean one of the 12 shorter prophetic books. It's also very close to the end of the Old Testament. So the easiest way to find this tiny book is either to use the table of contents or to find the book of Matthew in the New Testament and go backwards a little bit from there. It's the fifth book from the end of the Old Testament. Habakkuk. People disagree on how to say it. I say Habakkuk. This is another book of prophetic poetry. Oh, I could tell you, actually. It's page 1456. That's coming. I have it in my notes this morning. Page 1456, if you're using one of the Bibles in our pews. Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum. There we go. Page 1456. This is another book of prophetic poetry, which means that it is not going to make a whole lot of sense to us sometimes. This one is even a little bit more challenging because it doesn't even give us any specific time cues. No mention of who was king or what was happening, just jumps right in. Now, we assume from the context that it is before the southern kingdom of Judah had been destroyed, because it references the Babylonians. They're the ones who are going to eventually destroy Jerusalem and take some people into exile. In this book, that hasn't quite happened yet, but at this point, it seems to be inevitable. It's going to happen. I rather like the fact that there's no specific time cues, because for me that gives this book kind of a timeless quality, as though it could be speaking to us now. Let's see if you feel the same. We're going to read a little and then talk a little and then read a little more and talk a little more this morning instead of reading all the scriptures in one big chunk. So I am beginning in chapter 1, page 1456, verses 1 through 4. This is the prophecy that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long, O Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen? Or cry out to you, violence, but you do not save? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There is strife and conflict abounds. Therefore, the law is paralyzed and justice never prevails. The wicked hem in the righteous so that justice is perverted. Does that sound familiar to anyone else? Anyone else feel this way? It's so interesting. The word that's translated as prophecy right there in the beginning is actually a word that can also be translated burden. Burden. This is the burden that Habakkuk the prophet received. How long must I cry out, violence, but God does nothing? Why do you make me look at injustice? Why do you tolerate wrongdoing? Destruction and violence are before me. There's strife, conflict abounds, and justice never prevails. Dear ones, as we begin this season of Advent, if the state of the world is a burden on your heart, then you are in good company. If you feel like it's not supposed to be this way, you're right. It's not. To see the world in all of its brokenness is a burden to us. And we long for salvation. In the Old Testament, that word salvation refers to healing or rescue or victory. And I think that is still a pretty good metaphor for what the world needs. Healing and rescue and victory. In the middle to the end of the last century, there was a theologian named Paul Tillich. And he said, he described it this way, in the ancient world, when Jesus first came, people were primarily anxious about death. That was the problem that needed to be solved. In the medieval world, we'll say especially in Europe, humans were anxious about guilt. That was the problem that needed to be solved. In the modern world, people were anxious about meaninglessness. Think 1960s, 70s, nuclear threats. What is happening to the world? But in the postmodern world, we are primarily anxious about suffering and injustice. That is the problem that needs to be solved for us. If God is going to save us from something, then suffering and injustice are what we feel we need to be saved from. So in order for the idea of salvation to be meaningful, it has to address our felt need. And for most of us right now, I would say perhaps even around the world, our felt need is that we need to be healed and rescued and victorious over suffering and injustice. To see the world as it is a burden to us. Let's go on to chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. The prophet says, I will stand at my watchpost and station myself on the rampart. I will keep watch to see what God will say to me and what he will answer concerning my complaint. Then the Lord answered me and said, write the vision, make it plain on tablets so that a runner or a messenger may read it. For there is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks to the end and it does not lie. If it seems to tarry or delay, wait for it. It will surely come. It will not delay. The prophet challenges God and then expects a response. And surprisingly, a response comes. Now, I say surprisingly because although God seems to speak a lot in the Bible, I don't personally often get very direct answers from God. If you do, that is awesome. If you don't, let me assure you that there's nothing wrong with you. Or if there is, it's the same thing that's wrong with me and we can hang out. In this case, God does respond, but it is not the response that the prophet was hoping for. There is still a vision for the appointed time. It speaks to the end and it does not lie. If it seems to tarry, wait for it. It will surely come. The prophet says, the world is a mess. What is God going to do about it? And in the rest of chapter 1, which we skipped over, God gives an answer to that, which was that the Babylonians are going to come and destroy the country. And the prophet says, that's a terrible idea. What else are you going to do about it? And God's response is, wait. No. Perhaps Americans' least favorite word, wait. We don't wait. We want a straight answer. In fact, I would rather hear no than wait. But God says, wait. And this is one place that could be a growing edge for us this season. Because in this case, it is not wait with no other information. It is, there is still a vision for the appointed time. It will surely come. This is Advent waiting with preparation. Do what you can in the meantime, but ultimately wait for what God is doing, because you don't know when it's coming, and you probably can't make it go any faster. Maybe we can, we don't know, it's a mystery. Ultimately, we're doing what we can and we're waiting. Jesus is coming, change is coming. There are things that we can do to prepare, but also we just have to wait. And finally, let's read the very end of the book. This is chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. I love this so much. Though the fig tree doesn't blossom and no fruit is on the vines, though the produce of the olive fails and the fields yield no food, though the flock is cut off from the fold and there is no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will exult in the God of my salvation. God, the Lord, is my strength. He makes my feet like the feet of a deer and makes me tread upon the heights. From strength to strength, may we be strengthened. Thanks be to God. This is it, friends. Though the fig tree does not blossom and there is no fruit on the vines, though the produce of the olive fails and the fields yield no food, though the flock is cut off from the fold and there is no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will exult in the God of my salvation. This is the growing edge. When all evidence is to the contrary, hope. Hope anyway. Choose hope. Choose trust. Why? Why do something that seems so irrational when you look at the burden of the world? Well, maybe you choose hope because you can look back and remember when you have experienced God's goodness in the past. Maybe you choose hope because you have heard the testimony of other people who have experienced God's goodness in the past. Maybe you choose hope because the Bible speaks to you, and Hebrews 10:23 says, "Let us hold fast to the confession of our hope, because God who promised is faithful." Maybe you choose hope because Jesus came, or because Jesus will come. In Advent, we also look forward to when the earth shall be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as waters cover the sea. That's also Habakkuk chapter 2. Or maybe you hope anyway because that's just the kind of person you want to be. Maybe you choose hope because you want to hope, and who cares if other people think it's naive? We get to choose, so choose hope. The worst thing that we have ever done is not the last word about us. The worst thing that has ever been done to us is not the last word about us. What looks like the end is not the end. The world is about to turn. It's not supposed to be this way. We can choose to hope for the day when we shall beat our swords into plowshares and God will wipe away the tears from all faces. And we shall sit under our own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make us afraid. And the wolf will lie down with the lamb, and a little child will lead them. Romans chapter 8, verses 24 says, "For in hope we were saved, rescued, healed, victorious." Now, hope that is seen is not hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. The question for us this morning is, will we believe it when we see it? Or will we choose to trust it before we see it? Though the fig tree does not blossom, and there is no fruit on the vines, though the produce of the olives fails and the fields yield no food, though the flock is cut off from the fold and there is no herd in the stalls, hope anyway. This is the growing edge. Amen. As Brian comes back to the piano this morning, I want to offer you a few moments for reflection. I invite you, first of all, into a physical posture that makes it easier for you to do that. So you may need to close your eyes to help block out distractions. Or you may choose to softly focus your gaze on the lights on the tree or the nativity. I invite you to relax whatever tension you're holding in your body. Put your feet flat on the floor. Unclench your hands. And take a deep breath. Would you just allow the Spirit of God to speak hope to you this morning? In whatever way God speaks to you, it's different for all of us, and that's wonderful. Would you allow the Spirit of God to speak hope to you this morning? A closing prayer. God of hope, we receive all that you are offering us this morning. We choose hope We choose to be that kind of people. Would you meet us in this season and help our growing edges?